Recorded live at the wonderful Big Sushi Studio, it's my pleasure to introduce you to Slaughter Film.
Hello, you filthy animals. I am Corey, blue-eyed white devil Carr, and I am accompanied, as always, by Forrest Cracker-Ass Honky Taylor. And this is Slaughter Film, a weekly podcast devoted to reviewing the films that are legendary, even in hell.
And, of course, joining us as always is our lovely producer, John Linvay. I don't have a stereotypical middle name for you, so...
Stereotypically, what for?
Cotton. His name is Cotton.
Okay, there you go.
Johnny Cotton Picking Linvay? Is that what it is?
Well, no, you're just white like cotton.
Oh, okay.
As you probably guessed, this is Black History Month.
Oh,
and
my God.
To celebrate that, we're talking about the rich history of blaxploitation films, particularly movies that just took a popular horror franchise and said, what happened if the whole cast was black? Corey is talking about Blackula, and I'm talking about the sequel, Scream, Blackula, Scream. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what's going on with that?
Initially, I just want to say that... picking Blackula seemed like a better idea.
Well, yeah.
Because, I mentioned this before we sat down to record, that also, while I watched Blackula, I also checked out the documentary Badass Cinema,
mm-hmm.
which I've seen before, but it was, years ago, so I rewatched it. And it was, the history of blaxploitation, and it gave so many... better examples of blaxploitation than Blackula. But I mean, we're still going to have fun with Blackula, but I think afterwards we should have a real conversation about blaxploitation.
Okay.
Hey, man, you got a couple more weeks. You got one more week to talk about it.
This is true.
That's very true. It is a very interesting history because it's all loosely tied up with the independent grindhouse theaters that couldn't afford the big budget Hollywood movies or whatever, so they just showed their own movies, which ended up being Sweet Sweetback's Badass Song and shit like that. And those movies, even though they probably weren't very good, I've never actually seen Sweet Sweetback, but they probably weren't very well made. But people flocked to him because they were revolutionary. I mean,
right. They sort of invented their own heroes.
I mean,
in movies, probably since the beginning of film, the protagonist and hero, with just a handful of exceptions, was the white guy.
Yeah.
And so they finally started making movies, by themselves for themselves.
Yeah.
And,
right.
It's just I like it for a number of reasons, but I think mostly just because it's such a snapshot in time. It's uniquely American experience.
Very much
to see
so.
Something like that.
That's a really good point. But yeah, and then out of that, all these horror films, originally they were just they were, just inner-city, crime and, cop films, Shaft and stuff like that, and then they started moving on to other genres. You mentioned that there were some kung fu movies, which I've never seen.
Yeah, Black Belt Jones.
Okay.
And, what was her name? TNT Jackson was another one that was, the female version of that.
I've heard of TNT Jackson. I've never seen it.
Well, it seemed initially, a lot of them had to do with tough black dudes like Shaft and stuff,
mm-hmm.
and those films reflected a little more of the inner city and the black experience, and that's why they were so important and so beloved by all the film goers,
right.
Mm-hmm. But it seemed like once that got so big, people then either trying to cash in on the whole black movie theme,
right.
or just wanted to experiment, and that's where you had all these offshoots with Blackula in cheesy, less good horror movie interpretations of that whole idea.
Right, yeah, because then the horror movies came around, and we had Blackula and Blackenstein and the Blunch Black of Blocher Blame.
I need to fact check that last one. But there was a Dr. Black and Mr. Hyde.
Yes.
Oh, man.
My favorite attempt at, crossing genres was the attempted... blaxploitation / Nazi exploitation film with the Black Gestapo.
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever seen that? That movie is amazing.
I have it at home, but I haven't watched it yet. I picked up one of those, for $5 at Walmart, one of those grab bag movie. It was an urban title, generic. But it was $5, and I bought it for that movie. Because I'm this has got to be something interesting.
It's something to behold. All I got to say is throw the gun in the pool, motherfucker. And anyone who's seen the movie, you know about that line. So.
think the last blaxploitation movie that I've seen was Black Dynamite.
Black Dynamite rules. That movie just took everything that was like so lovingly ridiculous about this genre and just threw it right back in a big parody. It basically did for blaxploitation what like Young Frankenstein did for old 30s horror movies, you know, and stuff.
And I wouldn't even necessarily call it a parody, but more of a homage.
Yeah, I
just
suppose.
Because, like, even like if you look back at the movie Dolomite, that was like a comedic version of Shaft or something,
right?
And this is like it encompasses even that,
yeah.
You know, like a lot of the stuff in Black Dynamite that is a reference to these earlier movies, these earlier blaxploitation movies, are like they were made on a lower budget,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of times little dumb things would happen, like the boom mic would come in the frame,
right,
and like
right.
that happens in a scene in Black Dynamite that's fucking hilarious.
It's a great scene. It's a really good scene.
The whole movie is awesome.
Yes.
I suppose if you've never seen any of these movies that we're going to talk about, that wouldn't be a bad place to start.
Yeah.
Because there's no way you're not going to have fun watching them.
Right,
movie.
Right. Well, aside from that, what did you guys do this week? First of all, before you say anything, I want to apologize for subjecting you guys to Pink Flamingos.
No, it was awesome. So, yeah, maybe we should talk about that.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
So last week, Forrest, myself, our friend Harvey, and Forrest's brother,
mm-hmm.
The four of us got together and watched Pink Flamingos. And
my roommate for like 5 seconds.
Yeah, 5 seconds. We hadn't seen it before.
Yeah.
We knew a lot of what happened in it, but still we hadn't seen the movie from beginning to end, and it was something. There's one scene in particular where a woman is being harassed by a man in the park who has his wiener out.
And a sausage tied to it.
Yeah, that's his thing. That yeah. And this already happened earlier in the movie and to a couple girls, and the girls like shrieked and ran away.
Yeah, he's like a serial flasher.
Yeah. So now it's like later in the day or a couple days later, and he's doing it again. And to his surprise, the girl's into it. She like pulls out her titties and starts squeezing them, and then just when you thought it couldn't get any more ridiculous, she lifts her skirt and there's an equal size wiener.
Surprise, she has penis.
But see, the thing is, all four of us were like, oh, shit, because at no point did we expect that. And like, we grew up learning the facts of life from the internet. You know what I mean? Like, there shouldn't be anything out there in the world that surprises and shocks us, but somehow fucking John Waters in 1972 knew like the precise elements to copy and paste together that will leave four men like 40 years later completely baffled sitting in your apartment.
Because that scene was close to putting you in the boner zone. You were like, hey, she's pretty hot. And then penis. Uh-oh. I wanted to. When we were watching, I originally was going to try and get a camera and videotape our reactions as we were watching, and I'm so mad I didn't do that because that was a perfect like scenario for that.
It was.
We all had the exact same reaction.
Oh, man.
My roommate's the best thing. Yeah, he just walked by for like a couple of seconds, just looked at the screen. Then he came back and he was talking to his friends on Skype, and he said, yeah, they watched the movie in there. I watched for 5 seconds. All I saw was a butthole.
Oh, that's a true story.
Well, all that aside,
that's Pink Flamingo.
Yeah. Do anything else interesting this week?
I bought a dress shirt.
Oh, fascinating.
I know that doesn't sound very thrilling to most people, but I'm not the dress clothes type. I'm the, you know, tore up blue jeans with the fuck you t-shirt type. And so I got a dress shirt for Christmas, but it didn't quite fit, so I had to go back to JCPenney's and like return it and get fitted. And this was a couple weeks ago, and I'm just like, yeah, he said I'm this size, so I'll get this one like I would any other shirt. And I brought it home, and the measurements were correct for my like arm length because I'm lanky,
mm-hmm.
but because that was so big, the middle, once I tucked it in, it was like this big bubble of shirt underneath my armpits. I'm like, I can't have this. So the other day I took it back for the second time and I got a fitted shirt, and it works better. It's slim or whatever to compensate for my lanky girth.
Lanky girth?
Yeah. Well.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Cut my arms off. Sure, they're lanky, but they're big, right? They take up much volume. I don't know. But that's the thing. Like, I fucking hate shopping for clothes.
Yeah.
Like, trying shit on, fuck that. I don't want to come to where somebody works. Could you imagine someone coming to your place of employment and taking all their clothes off and putting on someone else's clothes? And like, that's just weird, and I don't like doing it. And it's, I don't know, it's just strange to me. And it's always one of those things, like, you know you have to do it.
Yeah.
And otherwise, it's a waste of fucking money, or you're going to have to bring it back and return it, like I did. Or, you know, if you try it on, oh, that seems to fit, and you're trying to get the fuck out of there like I normally would, and then you get home and try to put it on again later, and they're like, oh, wait, I should have spent more time in the changing room, because actually this doesn't fit. Now I'm mad at myself, because that was like 5 months ago, and there's no way I'll ever be able to return it, so I might as well just throw it out. Not donate it to a homeless person or anything, just fucking throw it out so I can forget the whole, just if I could surgically remove the memory. I don't know. I don't like clothes shopping.
I gathered. That's hey. A lot of vitriol you have for shopping for clothes.
Hey, Corey, do you want to talk about it? It seems like you got a lot on your mind, buddy. Yeah.
I buy clothes to cover my naked body so I don't get arrested.
Barely, though. I mean, you barely use clothes to cover your naked body.
I don't
Let's be honest
appreciate
for a moment.
The strife, the stress that I go through to find clothes that make me not look like a douchebag. I know I don't dress very flamboyantly. I mean, I have my own little thing going on.
Right.
But I generally do what I do so I don't attract attention to myself.
You're wearing a
I
leave Judge that, shirt.
Right.
Like, but all the things you're saying are not true.
Right. But I don't have, like, the like a gold dress shirt with, like, the buttons.
That's
like,
more
done.
Like, all right. So to you, that is flamboyant. But to, like, to everyone else, like, what you're wearing is equally as flamboyant.
It's just a black T-shirt.
It says Chud.
It says Chud.
Cannibalistic humanoid underground dwellers.
I'm not arguing. I'm just saying. Other people would be like, Chud, that's pretty flamboyant.
I don't know about Chud, lady, but I'll give you a chub. So that was my week.
Wow.
I bought a shirt and then sat around my apartment angry about it.
How the hell can I compete with that? All I did was I got a free rib dinner coming to me tomorrow. Did I tell you about this yet?
No.
Oh, damn. You know, at the art museum every Wednesday, they do the movies that they show?
Yeah.
Well, you know, last week, it was the week of Valentine's Day, so they wanted to be in the romantic mood. So they showed a movie called Before Sunrise, which is actually one of my most favoritest movies of all time to just sit and watch. Which is funny, because we just talked about Pink Flamingos, which has transsexual women and shit-eating and big gaping assholes. And now I'm going to talk about this, like, lovely, wonderful romantic film. It's just about two people, like, connecting on this one, like, perfect day together, and it's so, so good, but for totally different reasons that Pink Flamingos is good. So anyway, all
right.
I had to go see this movie because I love it. I watch it just about every Valentine's Day. And the next movie they're showing is Annie Hall, the Woody Allen movie. And out of nowhere, the guy mentioned, he just asked the audience, does anyone know the name of Woody Allen's character in that movie? And I raised my hand and just said Alvy Singer. And he was like, you just won a free meal for the next showing. I was like, oh, okay. Because, yeah, the next showing is being catered by, I think, like, the Outback Steakhouse. And you got to pay, like, $10 extra for, like, the meal or whatever. Except me. And he asked me if I wanted ribs or vegetarian. And, of course, I said ribs. So yeah. Now I got to go back down there tomorrow and check out Annie Hall, which is great because I love that movie.
I like how you're like, I gotta go back.
I have no choice.
Oh, they're
gonna
fucking feed me.
Yeah. I have to go down and fucking gorge on ribs that I have no right to be eating at all. But
I have right
said
to be eating.
Free.
I
we'll
answered
see.
The trivia question. I win. That I didn't even know it was a contest. I just.
But had you known it was a contest for a free meal, you'd have been like, fuck that. I don't want to have to come back here and eat.
No, actually, I was going to go see the movie anyway, but now I have no choice because I can't resist the free ribs.
Like, the way you say it is like, I have to go do this.
I do, I have to.
Don't put me in jail if I don't.
like I'm sitting here with a gun like to your head saying, Forrest,
eat some fucking
you
ribs.
You must go there and eat these ribs.
No,
or else.
I don't want to.
But my beach body.
Yes. I need to stay in peak physical shape. Can't you see?
It's like that Simpsons episode where Homer goes to hell and he's forced to eat donuts. More, please.
So, that's okay. So you're complaining about clothes shopping and I'm complaining about free ribs.
Will we ever be happy? Find never. Out on the next episode of Disgruntled Roommates.
Spoiler, no, never. You will never be happy.
I guess I'll just start with Blackula.
Yeah, as I say, you should probably start this time around because you're doing the first movie.
Yeah, fucking A, Blackula. I hear he's Dracula's soul brother.
Is that really the tagline?
It's in the trailer.
You shall pay, Black Prince. I curse you with my name. You shall be Blackula.
Blackula. The Black Avenger. Rising from his tomb to fill the night with horror. Blackula, Dracula's soul brother. Deadlier even than he.
Oh, shit. So, Blackula from 1972, written by Joan Torres and Raymond Koenig. Well, the only other thing those two wrote together, or wrote at all, even separately, was the sequel.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, Scream Blackula, Scream and Blackula. That's like their whole career, apparently.
Wow.
It was directed by William Kane, who went on to direct Dr. Black and Mr. Hyde, which, you know, I mentioned earlier.
Yeah, quite a theme career going on.
Yeah, well, I'm sure, you know, they just knew each other. And
yeah, right.
That was that. Hey, Forrest, got this idea for a movie. You want to direct it?
Does it feature a Black Dracula?
Yeah, okay.
I'm in.
See, that's how Hollywood works. Or that's how wherever this movie was made works. Our story begins as Count Dracula's castle. That wasn't what I meant to say. The story begins as a castle.
As a castle.
Sorry.
The story is a castle.
Our story begins at Count Dracula's castle in the year 1780. Count Dracula and Prince Mamuwaldi. Okay?
Yes.
Mamuwaldi.
Remember that name.
I didn't want to fuck that up. are hammering out some sort of deal that will end the slave trade. Apparently Dracula's big into that. And, like, at first, I kind of chuckled and thought, like, that's fucking weird. And, you know, none of the Hammer movies have I ever seen, you know, it's a slave trade brought up. But then I thought, actually, kind of makes sense, because he needs blood. He needs human blood. So I'm sure he would have a whole stable of slaves
just to feed
upon.
Yeah, that actually
makes
a lot of sense. I didn't think about that.
So Dracula isn't buying what the prince is selling. And soon, like, tempers flare and a fight breaks out. And Dracula then gets the drop on the prince, sucking his blood, turning him into a vampire, and cursing him to, from that moment on, carry on his name as not Dracula, but Blackula.
Because Dracula is a hardcore racist, and that's the name that he just gave to him to, like, insult him.
You're going
to
be like me, but black.
Yeah.
So I guess that's how that is.
Dracula's an asshole.
He ends up locking him in a casket and so that he'll remain there indefinitely, which I kind of didn't understand that part just because, I don't, isn't it like tormenting for him to go on living as
and a... drinking blood and
right,
stuff.
But instead he's just asleep for 200 years, so. now present day, circa 1972, two rather colorful interior decorators are purchasing the contents of Dracula's estate. It seems that the legend of Dracula is very in right now. And his furniture has real camp appeal. Yeah, the two interior decorators are very painfully, obviously homosexual. without bothering to look inside of the coffin that they find that has Blackula in it, along, you know, they just ship it off to Los Angeles with all the other crates of furniture and things. Then once it's there, you know, he gets loose and attacks them. And he starts sucking the blood of those two cocksuckers. See what I did? See what I did? I wrote a joke specifically to say cocksuckers.
Jokes are the best when you explain them.
That's why it's funny.
Like you didn't even give us a second to chuckle. Like,
you were going to chuckle. That's not good. That's terrible. So now, without much rhyme or reason, Blackula is just kind of roaming the countryside of Los Angeles.
It's not a countryside.
No, shush.
That vast Los Angeles countryside. I love it.
I'm going to milk me a cow or something. So he's just kind of like roaming along aimlessly, making victims of cab drivers and photographers that aren't really very important. So this draws the attention of the police, and the murders are being investigated by Dr. Thomas, who is a medical examiner. And I don't know if that's how that works. If there's murder, isn't like a detective assigned to a case?
Yeah, you would think.
So I don't know why the fuck that is. But it's actually his partner is like his girlfriend. So every scene that he's talking about, like, ooh, there are weird, you know, bite marks on their necks. That's strange. It's almost like Dracula. Ha ha. But that couldn't be. It ends up turning into like them flirting and kissing. So, as Dr. Thomas examines the bodies, he started to find out, like I mentioned, that the killer is a vampire. But, you know, how could this be? But who? I mean, the search continues. Getting fucking dramatic.
Yes.
Meanwhile, things take a turn as Blackula encounters a young woman, Tina, who bears remarkable... a remarkable resemblance to his African bride, Luva. And he pretty much just starts to stalk this woman because, oh, it's Luva. I've got to have you. You're my bride. He actually confronts her and explains how they know each other from a past life and that they're soulmates and they're meant to be together and all this. And she resists. She thinks he's crazy. And in total blaxploitation fashion, she gets real with him. She's like, nigga, get out of here. You're talking about like soulmates and shit. You're fucking weird. But
I thought vampires could just like look at women and they just like fall in love. Wasn't like a vampiric power?
Well, that sort of comes in later. See,
what
he tried
of,
to get
presence that vampires have.
Well, here,
so to speak. Right?
I'll explain.
They just look at them and they just walk. I want you to suck my blood.
So, see, a white vampire, maybe, but you see a soul vampire is smooth.
Oh my God.
He's smooth.
Right.
He uses
right.
his words.
Okay, sure.
I have a quote.
Okay, yep.
I won't force you to be with me. I've lost you once. And I'll have to accept losing you again.
Oh.
And it's like touching.
Blackula's honorable.
And romantic. And literally, at the end of that scene, they're in bed together. And by the end of the night...
Blackula, you sly motherfucker.
As they're laying in bed together, you know, they're talking about how now they have to be together. And now she says, like, I love you. And they've decided that she's going to be his vampire bride now. So could you imagine that? Like, I always thought this was kind of an interesting idea. Like,
could I imagine vampires in Los Angeles and that being a black vampire and then finding her black, princess?
All that. But
No, I could not imagine it.
Hypothetically, like, you know, you hear, like, the second coming of Jesus and all this. Like,
okay.
If he were to show up, would anyone even, like, without a miracle or something, would anyone even pay attention? They would just think he's crazy. You know what I mean? Like, Dane Cook had a bit about... going to an airport and looking like dead serious in someone's eyes as they're about to board and just say, don't get on the plane. Just don't. And they'll think like they just talked to an angel and that plane's going to crash somewhere or something. You know what I mean? Like, could this work? Can a guy walk around and just pose as like Black Dracula and say some really smooth stuff and get her in bed?
I think there are much worse pickup lines that have worked.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Yeah, but you get to wear a cape while doing this.
I think there are other worse pickup lines which involve capes or other costumes that have worked. I mean, fuck, look at the Harlem Shake videos that are going on right now.
I don't want to. Although
then don't do it. You're not missing much. It's fine.
I've seen like one.
I don't even
the original one.
I don't even understand where the name comes from. How does that? What does the Harlem Shake have anything to do with what they're doing? I have no idea.
Harvey showed me that video the other day, and I'm like, we need body suits. Because I would just do that. I don't care if there's music. I'll just fucking worm around and shit. So, back to Dr. Thomas. he's looking more into the disappearances of the previously mentioned photographer and cab driver. Because he's got a hunch. Even though he's not a police officer, he's got a police officer's instinct. in the photographer's darkroom, he finds photos of Tina and the prince, except the prince is missing due to his non-reflective, you know, vampire skin. Now, Dr. Thomas knows who to look for. He contacts the police, and there's like a all-points bulletin for an African Dracula-looking motherfucker. And I'm really bad at all kinds of jokes. I'm out of my element.
You jive turkey.
When I was watching this movie alone, all this shit seemed to be funnier. Oh, God. So once Blackula is located, you know, Tina's with him. They're together. She actually dies in the struggle. And heartbroken and without reason to live, Blackula turns himself in. And by turns himself in, I mean walking one agonizing step after another into the light of day. Thus concludes Blackula.
wait, what? That's it? That's all that happened?
Yeah. He just, you know, caught on fire.
He bones his woman, then the woman dies in some struggle, and he's like, fuck it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because that was sort of like a thing that was carried through the whole movie once
tragic
he...
Tragic love story.
Once he thought, like, that was Luva... Yeah. His like whole goal was that from that point on to find her and, you know, make her his bride. And then once that happened, you know, the cops got involved. Fucking
right.
Pigs.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, he had no reason to live anymore.
Yeah.
So he just walked into the sun.
I remember we watched this movie like way back in the day, and I remember it being a very flat movie. Like, there's not much to talk about besides those like basic plot points.
Yeah.
Like, not a whole lot happens in it, and that's like a cardinal sin of exploitation films is to be boring, and Blackula is boring through most of it.
Like, yeah, like even, you know, being like, accounting for like the exploitative elements of a lot of these movies, like there is, I don't remember there being any nudity,
no.
Or, and so the effects aren't really all
PG.
That great.
Of course,
they?
they're 70s PG, so there's like blood
okay.
and stuff, but it's not as bad as you would think, yeah. When they say exploitation, you expect, like, heavy
actually,
exploitation.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
You
just Corman mentioned, exploitation.
Right, yeah.
you just mentioned, like, 70s PG. So maybe you can help me with this, because I had a bet with a coworker about Slapshot, the movie Slapshot.
Yeah.
And when it was originally released, it did not have an R rating. This is what I'm proposing. And I remember, because I remember seeing it when I was younger, because my parents saw it.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, it's PG. You can watch this, but there's totally tits in that movie.
Mm-hmm. I could look that up. I'm curious now because I think it might have been when it first
when
came
you go,
out.
I mean, I haven't. I don't know where do you go to look up if the ratings change.
IMDb. I think they'll have the original rating on
you
there.
You could also probably just Google like an image of like the VHS cover.
Yeah, or the original poster when it first came out in 77.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So Slapshot. Anyone who remembers seeing it, let me know if it was actually rated R when it came out. Because if I remember correctly, like in the '70s, like the rating system was way more lax.
Way more lenient. Yep. Because PG, it meant just parental guidance. You know, it didn't mean like it's just for like 7-year-olds. It meant, you know, parents
should
take
watch
guidance.
This.
There's suggestionable
right.
stuff in here, you know. So it was actually like a more accurate interpretation of the rating, but there was
right.
heavier stuff back then, you know. So
right.
watching now, you're like, holy shit, this is PG. You
know? Right.
But that's black. Anything else to say about Blackula? Like,
well, I mean, you know, like, okay, what did I think about it? It's sure it's goofy.
Yeah.
Is it the best movie? No. But it's like from beginning to end, it's solid enough that it's, you know, it's watchable. There are some parts that are really fun. And by the end, it's even kind of, like, sad.
Yeah.
How he just, like, kills himself because
yeah.
his love's gone.
That's not much of a strong curse, though.
No.
From Dracula. I mean, like...
Well, I always want... I don't know.
Like, if, like, Dracula's all like, you're going to fucking pay for not giving me my slaves, and you're going to be a Dracula forever.
The two of them should have fought.
And then, like, well, the thing was, at any point, he was like, well, I'm just going to walk outside and fuck your deal.
Yeah.
That's a good point, though. There's never a fight between Blackula and Dracula.
Right.
I want to see that.
Like, there should have been,
yeah.
you know? Well, I guess, hypothetically, you could look or try to read too much into the Dracula character
mm-hmm.
as far as, like, the blaxploitation element, like being the white man.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, he's inflicting his will on
right.
the African prince.
That's what I got from that whole, like, storyline, yeah.
Well, that's one thing, too, that I think if this movie's ever remade or like it could be adapted into like, I don't know, a book or a comic book or something, like I think you could work in more African type elements because it's just said that he's an African prince, but he doesn't do or say anything that's really...
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I think some of those elements could have worked into his character a little more.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like, I know the second one, isn't there, like, some voodoo involved?
Yes. Okay. I start talking about the second one.
Yeah, go for
it. So, yeah, Scream Blackula Scream was 1 year later in 1973.
Who dares touch these rotting bones? Who dares call forth the most horrible specter of the damned? Now he's back. The Black Prince of Darkness, Blackula, recalled by the awesome powers of voodoo to stalk the earth in a new quest for blood. Blackula, Dracula's soul brother.
Yeah, this movie, it begins with, like, a voodoo cemetery. I guess, like, Los Angeles is a big hot spot for voodoo.
Well, it was the 70s.
Yeah, yeah.
It's in the countryside where all the cows are
that's
at.
That's right.
That's where all the voodoo happens.
This voodoo matriarch is on her deathbed, and all of her, like, disciples or whatever are watching over. And then her flamboyant son, Willis, busts in, and he's like, "Did she pick a successor?" And they're like, "She didn't say anything. She didn't pick a successor." And he's like, "Well, I'm her son, so I should do that." And they're like, "You haven't been here in forever. You know, you're a prodigal son or whatever. You don't deserve it. We're giving it to her, like, number one person, who is Lisa Fortier, played by Pam Grier." Which I always got, whenever I say Pam Grier, I say it like that, Pam Grier. So Willis feels like he's been given the shaft, so to speak, ha ha ha, and he promises, like, "Lisa, I'm gonna get this from you, you know, I'm gonna make you sorry, da da da." Then do a jump cut to this, like, creepy guy just digging up this grave, and he's like, "You want revenge, huh? I have something for you." And I was like, "What the fuck is this? Is this happening in the same scene?" Apparently not. It switched scenes at some point, I didn't realize. He digs up the bones of Blackula. And he says, you know, "Use your voodoo powers to bring these bones back to life. They contain great power." So cut to him in his, like, house or whatever, just, like, performing some voodoo mysticism over Blackula's bones, which do nothing. And then he's sitting there all, like, you know, depressed. It didn't work or whatever. And then, sure enough, they work better than he thought, because Blackula makes his triumphant return. And the first thing he does is just grab Willis and bite the shit out of him. Blackula in this is, he's more charming, but also more of a badass. Like, who is the actor that plays Blackula? I know he's the king of cartoons.
He is the king of cartoons from Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Yeah.
His name is William Marshall.
William Marshall, thank you. He's a good actor, because he can be very, very charming and dignified, like, in the talking scenes. But then when he becomes Blackula, he is hammy as all get out, and I love it. Like, this isn't a time when, like, the method was still really big, and, like, even these really low budget kind of, like, trashy movies, you would find actors that would just throw everything into it. Like, it wasn't just a way to make a paycheck; it was art, motherfucker.
Right.
And I think that he really shows that. So suffice to say, he turns Willis into a vampire, and Willis is funny. He's like, all, like, decked out in his, like, pimp gear or whatever, and he's, like, trying to look at himself in the mirror, and there's no reflection, and he's like, "Oh, man, I can't see myself," and Blackula's like, "I'm afraid it's one of the curses of being a vampire," and he's like, "Hey, man, I don't mind being a vampire, but Bud's gonna see himself sometime, you know?" Like, this one has a lot more, like, humor, and it moves a lot more than the last movie, so I kind of like it better already. But Blackula asks for the information about Lisa Fortier, and Willis gives it all to him and mentions that they're having this party. Her boyfriend, Justin, was a former, like, police detective who now, I don't know what he does, but he, like, one of his hobbies is he collects rare African artifacts. And then Blackula comes down there. And like I said, The actor that plays Dracula is charming as all hell. Like, he comes in, he starts talking about the artifacts. Like, they're doing their pseudo-intellectual shit, like, this is clearly an artifact from, you know, the 5th century or whatever. And Blackula comes in just like, actually...
They also home interiors or interior decorators?
No. The one guy's like a professor of African studies, and he's like doing his whole, like, yes, this is from the 5th century, and it's this, and this. And Black comes in and is like, actually, this is from the 1700s, and it means, like, whatever. And he just, like, completely, like, schools this guy in African knowledge.
That's funny.
And yeah, he just comes in just charming the shit out of everybody, just like talking about rare antiquities and stuff. And Lisa takes a liking to him, and she starts showing him around, and she asks him, you know, what is your job? Why are you so interested in these old African antiquities? And he's like, oh, it's just a hobby of mine. I'm afraid I'm actually retired. And she's like, you're a little young to be retired. And he's like, you flatter me, but I'm afraid I'm much older than you would think. I was like, this guy is a charming motherfucker. Like, it shows this one other woman who, like, totally has the hots for him. And I was like, why is that not, like, everyone in the room? Because this guy is just coming in, charming the pants off of everybody. But after a while, like, he, you know, stakes out the house or whatever and then says he has to depart.
Hey, careful with that word. They're vampires.
Oh, right? Yeah, sorry. But, you know, he leaves the place, then turns into a bat, then, like, flies back in to attack that woman that, like, totally had the hots for him, you know?
Was the bat a cartoon?
It was a cartoon bat, yeah. But it's great.
It was the first movie, too.
He turns into a bat, and there's, like, this one guy outside who sees him, and he's just like, oh, shit. It's, like, the weirdest reaction. Like, at first he's kind of like, and then it just, like, slowly turns into a shit type of thing.
Fucking vampires are back.
So Justin and Lisa's friend dies right there at the party, and that causes Justin to get back involved with the police force. And
because you can just go back whenever you want.
Well, yeah. And the chief, the stupid chief as he is, believes that the voodoo people are involved because, you know, they're all into snakes, and she has these two bite marks that are snake-like, you know, fangs. And he says, like, one of the practices of voodoo involves drinking blood, and she was completely drained of blood. And it's like, is that a practice of voodoo? I don't really know. But Lisa's all upset because she thinks that... that they're, you know, accusing her of killing her friend or whatever. And then they mentioned that, you know, Willis held this grudge. And they're like, oh, okay, so maybe it's Willis. So they start, like, doing their investigation. Meanwhile, Justin is, like, getting interested in the occult because this whole thing seems kind of weird. So he starts, like, checking out occult books and sure enough finds Legend of Vampires. Which, again, I don't expect them to be like, oh, it must be some African prince turned vampire. But, like, when something like this happens, there should be one guy who's like, this looks like a fucking vampire did it. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It's clearly... but again, because it's a blaxploitation film, they always have to have some sort of social commentary in there. Blackula turns back into a vampire and is walking on the street, and some hooker hits on him, and he just walks by. And these two pimps show up, and they're like... hey, man, why don't you like our goods? You know, are you a faggot or whatever? They're just, like, ragging on him for shit like that. And he turns around and he's like, you have enslaved your sister and you've enslaved yourselves like your slave masters. And then they, like, freak out and try to stab him, and he totally kills the shit out of both of them. And
that's,
I'm just
way,
like,
better than the first movie.
Yeah, I'm just like, yeah, you go, Blackula, you know? But as the story goes along, he starts, like, building up an army. But I'm not sure if he's doing it intentionally, because Blackula is kind of like a passive villain in this. Like, he just wants to... rid this curse, but at the same time he's a vampire and he's got to eat, so he's like constantly draining blood out of like Lisa and Justin's friends, and then they're turning into vampires. So he had this like whole cabal of like all these like 70s vampire people, you know. And I'm not sure if like he intended that to be or not. Meanwhile, he's like putting the charms on Lisa more and more, and he tells her, you know, tells her the whole story that he was the Prince Mumawaldi. And he's been turned into a vampire, and he knows that she has, like, her voodoo powers, and she can use that to lift the curse of him. And then he said he'll go back to Africa, and he'll, you know, all of his rage and everything will just dissolve, and he'll just live his life or whatever. And I'm like, oh, so he's not really a villain. He's just trying to get rid of this damn curse, you know? meanwhile, Willis is going nuts with his vampirism. He, like, invites his girlfriend over and starts giving her a sensual massage, which eventually turns into a vampire bite. And this is probably my favorite scene, because Blackula gets together his group and says, you know, you can do whatever you want to the humans, but don't hurt Lisa Fortier. As long as she's in this house, she's under my protection. And if anyone, like, lays a finger on her, you'll suffer an eternity of agony or what the fuck ever. And Willis is like, fuck that, man. This bitch stole my voodoo king status or whatever. And he's like, I want to get my revenge. And then Blackula shows up as he's, like, talking about how he's like, I'm going to fucking kill this bitch or whatever. And then he turns around, he's like, oh, hey, man, I was just kidding, you know, whatever. But then his girlfriend, she's like, what are you doing? You know, you said you wanted to kill this bitch. Who's this guy? Who's this guy to tell us what to do or whatever? And you get to see Willis like, bitch, that's Blackula, you know? But like you said, John, like, she's, like, doing her, like, sassy talk back to Black, and then he just gives her, like, the death stare, and then she shuts the fuck up.
Right.
Well, meanwhile... Yeah. Justin is back with his old police force, and he like learned all he needs to know about vampires, and he's 100% certain that there's a vampire among them. Of course, the cops are all like, what the hell are you talking about, a vampire? But
wait, don't they remember just like a little while before when they had the chase after fucking Blackula the first time?
Wait, what?
Like the police got involved.
Oh, yeah, in the first movie. Don't you remember? You would think. No, in this movie, they just all like forgot that the first
movie
even
happened.
Maybe
it's a different part of the countryside.
But then one of the cops comes in. He shows like the pictures.
Wait, who buried him?
I don't know. That's a very good question.
Yeah, all right, sorry. Continue.
So moving on. Some of the cops show up and they're showing the pictures they had of them, you know, taking care of the bodies of the two pimps that he killed. And in the pictures, it's clearly them like lifting the bodies, but there's no bodies there. And Justin's like, well, because vampires don't have reflections, you know, isn't this enough of a thing for you? Like, and but they're still convinced that it's Willis. Which is funny because Blackula and all of his cronies are at Willis's house. So it's funny. They're like, oh, vampires, that's stupid. But it's clearly some like voodoo plot with using like snakes and the draining of blood or what the fuck ever. So the cops are all heading down.
The more complicated.
Yeah.
Thing.
So the cops are all heading down to Willis's place. They've got all their guns and everything. And then Justin finds like all these picket fence like posts just sitting there. And he's like, here, take all these. He starts like just arming all the cops with stakes and shit. They bust in, and the vampires attack, and it becomes this, like, awesome scene of vampires killing cops, cops killing vampires, just all over, like I said, this movie moves a lot more than the original Blackula, just because, like, there's so many more vampires, and Justin eventually, like, finds this crossbow, it's just at Willis's house for some fucking reason, and starts, like, staking the shit out of vampires with that, you know? Meanwhile, Lisa Fortier is doing her, like, voodoo... curse dispel thing for Blackula, and it's just about to have, like, all, like, you know, the lights are flickering, and Blackula's like, I can feel the curse leaving me, or whatever, and then just right then and there, Justin busts in, and the curse is, like, still holds or everything, and he's like, we were so close, and Lisa's like, it's okay, we can just, like, start over, but at this point, Blackula's enraged, and he starts, like, storming into the place, just, like, killing cops left and right, you know, and then he comes after Lisa, and he has her at his mercy. He's about to, like, bite her. And then all of a sudden, Justin busts in. And he's like, Mama Waldy! And then he turns around. And he says the best thing ever. He turns, just, like, gives him a death stare. Walks up to him and he's like,
the name is Blackula!
And I wish I could say it like him. Like, it wasn't that bad. Like, it was so much more melodramatic than that, and I wish I could say it like he does, but it's in the trailer, so we're totally going to put that in there. But he fights with Justin and, like, picks him up and is about to, like, you know, kill him or whatever. So he says that he's going to turn him into what he is, you know, basically put the same curse that Dracula put on him. But then Lisa, who as part of her, you know, voodoo ceremony or whatever, made a little tiny, like, voodoo doll of Blackula that she was, like, doing the spell over. Then she takes that little voodoo doll and stakes it with one of the wooden arrows. And Blackula starts freaking out and she's, like, staking it over and over again.
Huh.
And then that's it. That's the end of the movie. Like, she stakes him one last time and he just looks up in the air and lets out this blood-curdling scream. And then the frame freezes and the credits roll.
That's kind of interesting, because, like, you know, a way to kill a vampire is to stake him in the heart, but, like, she stuck him with voodoo.
Yeah, she used the power of voodoo to fight his
vampires. That's bullshit. That wouldn't happen. If I was a vampire, I'd be like, fuck your doll.
I mentioned before how, like, 70s exploitation movies don't really end. They just kind
of
stop.
A lot of them, yeah.
And this is the best – this is the worst example I was going to say, because – like, Texas Chainsaw, that was a great way to just end, because it ends in such a, like, an uneasy note.
Yeah.
But this movie – it ends, and I was like, well, then what? Like, we don't even know if Blackula died. Last time we saw him, he just, like, screamed up into the air, and then that's it. Could even just, like, ow, that hurt. Okay, now I'm going to kill you, you know?
Like, that's we what don't he know. Did. And no, then, that's what he did. I'm going to go with that.
Okay,
what he
yeah,
did.
There you go. And we'll never know, because that was the last Blackula movie, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I that sucks.
Well, unless you count, like, what is it, Vampire in Brooklyn or whatever.
Okay. I'm going to count that, because I refuse to believe that's how the Blackula story ends. Second of all, I was actually really, really mad at Justin, who was supposed to be the hero, but all he did was fuck up Blackula's plan to not be cursed as a vampire anymore. It reminded me, do you remember the Batman Animated Series episode where Clayface is trying to cure himself?
Yeah.
He's, like, stealing all his, like, chemicals or whatever, and the scientist is helping him.
Yeah.
And then at the end, you see he's, like, starting to turn human, and then all of a sudden Batman comes in and, like, shuts the power down. And I'm like, what the fuck, Batman? Like, he was going to be human again. Like, that was his whole point.
Crime doesn't pay.
I guess not.
If he went through legal channels, everything would have been all right.
So, that's that. This one, like I say, it moves a lot better, and it's a lot more action-packed than the other Blackula. And this one's also, like, a lot more 70s hip. Like, it's got Willis in there, who's, like, always, like, doing his stylish, like, hey, baby type of stuff. The hair is amazing in these movies.
I'm sure.
It's the early 70s, so everyone has, like, ridiculous sideburns and froze as far as the eye can see. But my favorite is Willis. His hair is amazing in this movie. He has, like, a James Brown thing going on, but it's too big for his head. So he's like, it looks like he's walking around with this, like, fucking giant hair helmet thing. It's hard to describe. You just have to see it. It's ridiculous. But yeah, that's it. I wish they would have made a third one, because I want to know what happens with Blackula's story after this.
Yeah, as far as the first one being, you know, like, a black version of Dracula.
Yeah.
It kind of, like you said, it was pretty flat. And the only thing that really was interesting about it were a couple, like two or three sassy black, like, one-liners and stuff. You know what I mean? It wasn't all that great, but now I definitely have to check out the sequel.
Yeah. Yeah, it's much better. So, yeah, I wish we could have picked better blaxploitation movies to talk about.
But, in retrospect, we probably should have. But we knew we'd have fun talking about these.
Yeah. that's pretty
maybe
much
next
it.
Next week.
I want to know, I don't think it is, but I wish that it was. One of my favorite bands, Rocket from the Crypt, their most famous album is called Scream Dracula Scream. And it's based on something else, but I was kind of hoping that it would be based on that movie, because that would make me like that album even more than I already do.
Like, knowing we were going to talk about this, I mean, you can make the argument that a whitesploitation film would be, like...
What is a whitesploitation?
Movies with white people in them, right? But then I thought, like, no, because blaxploitation took, like, the everyday elements of being black and put them in the movie. Where, like, James Bond, everyone isn't that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're right.
You know, like, that movie, James Bond, like, you can superimpose, like, a black actor in there, and it would be the same movie, pretty much. But, like, what would be a white movie? And, of course, it would have to have, like, some. There have to be a plot twist involving him not having an ass. Because we are so generic and not,
I was
like,
going to say, a whitesploitation movie would be like Office Space.
Right. That's true. But, like, there's so many things about, like, black culture that are interesting.
Yeah.
It's easy to really spice up a movie, like a genre movie.
Right.
But, like, what the fuck do white people do?
I don't know. We're boring.
We don't do any. Yeah, we bitch a lot. Like, you know what I mean?
No, we co-opt other culture.
Yeah.
Sorry to bring it all down.
No.
That's what we do. We look at blaxploitation movies is what we do.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's an idea for a movie, a whitesploitation movie.
It's white people making a blaxploitation movie.
No, we have a guy. Yep. He works in an office.
Okay.
And he's one of those guys that he doesn't have a very good sense of humor, and he always wants to share jokes with you, but they aren't funny, but you feel that you have to smile just to make him feel better. And his wife is a Zumba instructor. That's why there aren't any white exploitation. It's too real to be good.
That's good.
Although his son, who is obviously white, thinks he's black.
Ah, yeah.
I guess that's the whole movie.
That's pretty much it.
White people are fucking not interesting.
On that note, anything else to add?
Not about blaxploitation, at least at the moment, but we do have a comment.
Oh, we got a comment. Oh, cool.
From Gex again.
Hey.
He says, I'm wondering when you guys are going to completely go over the edge for weird, messed up movies and start reviewing just anime horror flicks.
I could.
Well, it says you're almost there with movies on like the weird Asian fetishes and big monsters.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is, yeah. Actually, I was almost thinking about that the other day. Not anything too weird, but there's this vampire anime called Blood.
Oh, yeah.
And it's pretty good.
It's all right. Yeah, it's pretty all right.
So I could see actually doing if we had like a anime theme or something one day.
You should do High School of the Dead.
Huh? I've heard of that, but I haven't seen it.
It's everything that is awesome about anime and zombies.
Cool.
So it's like schoolgirls and uniforms and boobs and sex and dumb stuff and stereotypes.
Do the zombies have sex?
No.
I don't care.
It's not that type of anime.
He also recommends Angel Heart, which is like a fucking perfect
movie
for
movie.
Us to review. So in the near
I might
not
review
so
that
near
in
future,
the near future. Yeah,
that's definitely one. I kind of forgot about that one for a while.
Yeah.
Also voodoo.
Yes. Also, Mickey Rourke before his face became some like hideous beast thing.
Well, you know I'm guessing that all happened because he was like a fighter for a while.
Yeah,
like,
he was a boxer.
Up acting, and so that's when you know that whole thing happened.
Yeah. That whole thing.
That's a weird story in Mickey Rourke, because you go back to his early films, and he's like Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
and really Brad good. Pitt has gone on to say that the reason why he started acting was because of Mickey Rourke.
Yeah. I guess he had, like, an attitude, or he developed
it was hard to work with. Mm-hmm.
And so people stopped working with him, and he didn't have work, so he just took out his frustration on another guy's face.
Right.
Then he was in The Wrestler, and it was amazing.
Right, yeah, that pretty much, like, turned his career around.
He was also in Domino, which was not amazing.
Well, he's also in Sin City.
I was going to say, that was his big comeback, at least in my opinion, was his performance as Marv. That's when I was like, Mickey Rourke's a damn good actor. You
know? Yeah. Well, he was a good actor even back then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's an Iron Man.
I forget what movie I saw with him. It's like the diner car. What's the name of that movie? I don't know. I watched it recently. But it has fucking Paul Reiser, I think, is in it too.
Really?
Yeah.
So we're talking 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like when they were
it
all
black and white.
No, it was in color. They were all hella young. But yeah, Mickey Rourke has actually a really weird and interesting history of film,
real
very
life story.
Very
filmography.
Fascinating life
I don't
story.
Know. Yeah.
Well, on that note, maybe I will do Angel Heart sometime here. I guess is that it.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Well, have a happy rest of Black History Month, my friends, and be sure to check out our website, slaughterfilm.com. We have news and we have reviews.
And make sure to let us know if you have any comments or questions or concerns or feelings or bad dreams or anything. We have an email, slaughterfilm@hotmail.com, or you can find us on Facebook, or you can leave comments on YouTube or our website. Or you can train carrier pigeons and have them fly us messages. You know, whatever.
Yeah.
We're open to that.
Catch you later, you jive turkeys.
Yeah, you honky motherfucker.
This edition of Slaughter Film has been brought to you by our producer, John Linvay, introduced by me, Ricky Morrow, and music by Xeno Genocide.